On Mondays, we read from your letters. Reverend Dr. Mary Susan Gast wrote us about our show on what happens to cities after riots, such as the one in Benton Harbor, Michigan. Reverend Gast was born in Benton Harbor and grew up on the family farm near its twin city, St. Joseph. In the early 1960s, a headline appeared in the St. Joseph Herald Press, she writes, "First Negro Family Buys Home in St. Joe." In a couple of days, there was a follow-up headline and article about the firebombing of that home. The contrasts between St. Joseph and Benton Harbor have, it seems, grown more stark over the years. Dwight Acey also wrote in. He was a teenager living in Newark, New Jersey during that town's riot in 1967. One of the results, he writes, was that white people left, businesses left, and young black people left. There was almost no capital for the people left behind to rebuild the community. It's an enormous loss for the black community and, in the long run, for the white community. We all lose people who should have been developed to their fullest in this society, white and black. Last Wednesday, we marked the 100th anniversary of George Orwell's birthday with a conversation with Christopher Hitchens, author of Why Orwell Matters. Teresa McKimmy from San Jose, California, enjoyed the discussion, but disagrees with Christopher Hitchens' contention that Orwell wrote nothing which he could be ashamed of today. McKimmy teaches writing at a community college. This past spring, she and her students read Orwell's autobiographical novel, Down and Out, in Paris and London. "My students and I greatly enjoyed the book," writes McKimmy. "We came to understand and appreciate Orwell's depiction of the horrifying devastation of extreme poverty and its effects on both the body and the spirit. We were also disturbed by the anti-Semitic and other similar bigoted comments that occur with some frequency. Here's an example. After knowing him, I saw the force of the proverb, 'Trust a snake before a Jew and a Jew before a Greek, but don't trust an Armenian.'" We asked Christopher Hitchens to join us once again and to respond to that letter. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Hitchens.
It's a pleasure.
How would you react to that comment? Would you change your mind about what you said on the show at all?
No, I would not, but I'd have to divide my reply into two fashions, I think. First, I should add, it's not an autobiographical novel. It's an account of going down and out in London and Paris. It's journalism rather than fiction. And for that reason, I think it owes a duty to verisimilitude. In other words, that's the way people talked at the time, and that's probably what he did feel. We certainly know that he was brought up to dislike the working poor and the poor, to dislike and to fear them. In my view, the whole interest of George Orwell, and I say this in my book, is that you see him self-consciously struggling to overcome these prejudices. He never claims to have always had the correct opinions. Rather to the contrary, he claimed always that he wanted to, so to speak, reform himself. And you can see the process going on in his work. And if you take it as a whole, what it is a very interesting piece of self-education.
So in other words, you're saying that he is a writer, you can see his ideas change?
Yes, and you can see him having a confrontation with himself, an argument with himself on a number of points. But I don't think it's a cause exactly of shame. I think that it's a matter for honesty, which I think is not in itself a cause for shame, though of course it can be a cause of embarrassment.
All right, well, thanks very much, Mr. Hitchens.
No, thanks for asking.
Christopher Hitchens is a columnist with Vanity Fair and the author of Why Orwell Matters. Finally, we received this email from Robert Zimmerman about our segment on dream vacations. He wrote to us from Ross Island in Antarctica. "For over 10 months, I have been living and working at McMurdo Station, the United States' largest Antarctic base. We just passed our winter solstice, and in 2 months, the sun will rise again. The past weeks of total darkness are beginning to take their toll on me. My dream vacation? Last night I dreamed I was paddling a kayak through the clear blue waters of a New Zealand public swimming pool. To be honest, I don't care where I go when I leave here, so long as I can sleep in." We read from your letters every Monday. Send your emails to totn@npr.org. And don't forget to put the topic in the subject line and provide us with any hints on pronouncing your name or where you live. Talk of the Nation is produced by Susan Lund, Setsuko Sato, Justine Kennan, Alicia Montgomery, and Megan Williams. Our director is Chad Campbell. Our production assistant is Brendan Banizik. Our intern is Amelia Shaw. The technical director for Talk of the Nation is Kevin Waite. He had assistance this week from Michael Cullen and Vince Muse. The senior editor is Ellen Silva, the senior producer Sue Goodwin, and Leith Bishop is the executive producer of Talk of the Nation. In Washington, I'm Lynn Neary, NPR News.